Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig and Begora. Guess what?
Yeah, we're just back from the Emerald Isle, the Irish Republic to be precise. And despite all the best attempts of hurricane or tropical storm Sandy, depending on which you like to call it, we managed to get there. And
just one day late, but we got there.
And we had a wonderful time, and we saw some parts of Ireland that we had never seen before.
Yeah, last year we really hovered around Dublin and Ballymaloe, and this time we ventured to the wild and woolly west and southwest coast.
The wild and woolly west.
It's a little different
than the American West, which is extraordinarily dry, and the Irish West is extraordinarily wet.
Yeah, it was wet.
As we discovered, and it's green, and it's mountainous, and it's beautiful, majestic, however you like to describe it.
Yeah, we were just blown away with the landscape.
Adjectives just kind of fail. Yeah. So anyway, we'll bring it to you in three doses over the next 3 weeks, and the first segment positions us in the county of Galway, far west, and sort of in the middle and just north of the middle, if you'll pardon me describing it that way. To the south is County Clare and County Kerry. Kerry, K-E-R-R-Y, to the north is County Mayo and County Sligo and County Derry. But it's when you're standing on the coast in Galway, the nearest piece of land is Newfoundland, all the way across the North Atlantic. So it's pretty maritime. It's pretty wild scenery. The people are charming. The people are welcoming. They are really...
They have a great sense of humor, and they're great conversationalists.
They sure are.
And storytellers, all of these things.
All of the above.
But and, Galway is also a town, a city.
Yes, Galway.
The second largest in Ireland, I believe.
No, I think it's the third largest.
In fact,
it might even be fourth. The second is Cork.
The
third is probably Limerick, but it might be Galway, and then if it's the other way around, then Limerick would be fourth. But the city of Galway is quite a growing metropolis, very very busy, lots of traffic, partly thanks to the very small roads, I suppose. It was an area that was fueled by the Celtic Tiger economic boom of the 1990s and the early and the first decade of the 21st century. Economic times are a little harder now, they say, but you sure couldn't tell that from all the people who are out and about, all the people spending, all the people driving, and we had a wonderful time.
Yeah.
So we're bringing to you three...
To
begin with, three properties which happen not to be in the county of Galway outside the city, all of them located in the city of Galway itself. To give you an idea of what's going on there, there's quite a drive to modern cooking, modern cuisine, and in their own way, these three establishments are all doing that. First up, young man who, working with his wife, managed to snare the very first Michelin star anywhere in the west of Ireland in this year, 2012. So everyone's very excited about that. Everyone shares in his success. And J.P. McMahon joins us to try to explain that.
No visit to the west of Ireland would be complete without a stop in Galway, and also without a conversation with its latest culinary superstar, who is John... Oops, I was going to say your full name. J.P., as you're known, McMahon. Welcome to On the Menu, J.P.
Thank you very much.
I'm looking at a brochure that lists three restaurants. The first one, called Cava, which we ate at last night, and it is a Spanish restaurant tapas bar with some sort of reservations because it's the ingredients are Irish, and you're going to explain that to us. Then the restaurant that just won a Michelin star, which is an amazing feat for a restaurant in Western Ireland, and it's Anir, which is contemporary dining. Then we have one, a gastropub, which we have not approached yet. Next trip for that one, but you'll tell us about that. Let's start with, how long have you been cooking, where do you come from, and how did you get into this restaurant business?
I started cooking at a young age, about 15, and I I cooked, I suppose, nowhere in particular, here, there, and everywhere. And we moved to Galway, myself and my wife, in 1999. We really liked Galway. Both of us were working in the restaurant business. After that, we went to Edinburgh, we went to Cork. I went back to college, and I thought I wouldn't be a chef anymore. I went and did English and art history. And I still have an unfinished PhD that I'm trying to finish. So, and then we moved back to Galway in 2005. And I suppose we always had in the back of our minds that, God, it would be nice to open up a restaurant. And in between all this, when my wife was working in somewhere else, and I was still trying to do my PhD and one chefing on the weekends. And then this space that we're in now, Cava, presented itself. And I suppose we were younger, and I suppose a bit naive. I suppose if I knew now what it took to run a restaurant, I don't know if I'd go and do it. But we thought, well, this would be brilliant. We'll have a restaurant, and we'll. I was very influenced by Spanish cooking at that time. My wife's brother lived in Spain, and we'd gone over there a few times. We had friends over there, particularly to Barcelona, Madrid, San Sebastian, like all of the places that like have fantastic food. Everything from tapas in the side of the street to molecular cooking, and like very like from the high to the low. And I suppose I was really fascinated by everything there, you know, and also by the style of eating.
Now, could you just run through some of the items? It's a very long menu at Cava, but some of the items that are particularly popular here. We love the lentils, for example.
Yeah, in Cava we have some items that are very, I suppose, Moorish and rustic, like our lentils, or we use a lot of chickpea and spinach. And then we have other dishes that are really popular as well, that are iconically Spanish, like the patatas bravas or gazpacho or jamón serrano, tortilla. And then we have other dishes that I think that are probably a bit more refined, like we have a duck and plum, which is a free-range duck cooked in Pedro Jimenez sherry. We have lamb dishes, and we have our own little steak and foie gras burgers that we make ourselves here. So I like the with the menu in Cava, it's quite large, and I suppose it gives me scope to do both the something that appeals to everyone and also something that you can refine quite a bit.
And then right next door we have Anir, which means from the west, and it is contemporary, as I said before. It's very much of the moment and of the place. Could you talk a little bit about that, and including, I don't think you told us your wife's name, I think you ought to do that, and also your head chef's name at Anir.
Yeah, so to try and explain how Anir came about a year and a half ago, the restaurant next door closed, and there was an empty space there. And to be honest, in Ireland at the moment, there's a kind of a two-tier system with regard to rents since the financial collapse. Because, I mean, I don't know if you have this over in America, like Ireland has always had, the rents have always been pitched to the property owner. So it's always been upward only. So when you sign into a lease, like after 5 years, it goes up or it stays the same, but it never goes down. And what had happened to us in Cava, and I suppose again, we were young and naive, and we signed up in 2008 just before everything collapsed. And so our rent here was very, very high. And then the place next door closed down, and because that was an empty space, the landlord wanted to fill it. And so the rent next door was a fifth of what we pay here. And so we, half of us, on the one side, okay, we had this new exciting idea, and the other half was like, oh my God, there's a place next door that the rent is going to be a fifth of here. Can we do something? And my friend Enda, who'd worked in a previous restaurant, Sheridan's on the Docks, they had closed due to rent difficulties as well. And he had just come back from a stage in Noma in Copenhagen. And myself and Enda and Drigian have known each other a long time. And Enda had this wonderful idea about creating a food that was very particular to Galway. And I suppose we call it terroir-driven, terroir from the wine. But how do you make a style of cooking particular to a specific place? I know Noma have very much popularized this idea, and it's a contemporary trend in cooking. I mean, you have Mugaritz, you have the Favican, like there's many, many places in the world now looking into, specific, their own specific indigenous place and what grows there and what sort of what's different, say, between a lamb in the west of Ireland and a lamb from the east coast, or what's the difference in taste, and like why does it taste different? Is it because, and it, or I suppose it is because of a sense of place. So you have a great kind of story of Connemara lamb and the lamb out there, and they're by the sea, and the sea has a lot of salt in it, and the salt goes into the grass, and the lamb eat the grass, and there is, it does change our, I suppose, our attitude towards animals and towards everything, down to the hair on the side of the road.
Now, a Noma and a number of the new Nordic cuisine chefs forage. I wanted to ask you, do you forage? And I also would like, I have this menu from Anir, if you could pick out some of your most favorite dishes.
Yeah, just on the issue of on the issue of foraging, I don't get out to forage too much, but very much the driving force, one of the driving forces behind Anir would be, and it would be very much into attempting to find things that possibly we would have eaten a long time ago that we don't eat anymore, and this is why it's a why we can say it's a contemporary trend, but it's also something that's very, very old. Gathering fruits or herbs or sorrel or wild garlic or chickweed or anything like that, something that perhaps we've forgotten almost because of our contemporary situation. And Enda and the chefs next door, Connor and the other guys, I mean, they get out once or twice a week and try. And we also have people who forage for us. And they also forage for the restaurants. They drop stuff into Cav as well. Wonderful mushrooms, chanterelles from nearby, girolles. Only yesterday I was talking to our sous chef next door, Connor, and he got a wonderful bog mint, which is mint grown on the bog. And it's so particular. I mean, it tastes of mint, but it has this earthiness to it. And they're thinking now of how to do a dish with this, and also to try and incorporate the sense or the place where it grows. So how do we bring bog into a dish? I mean, or how do we bring like wood, or in some way, any sort of way? And again, this is the way, I suppose, dishes start in there, is as they find something, and then how can we bring this into cooking and present it in a way that will still wow people? So like, even though I'm looking at the menu here, and like to look at some of the items that people find interesting, just one of the desserts, we have a beetroot and rose parfait with hazelnut praline and sorrel. Now the sorrel in that dish is turned into a jelly, like a nice sweet jelly, and then that's something I always find, particularly when we're talking to our customers, they really find that fascinating, how you can take a herb and turn it into something sweet, and then also take something like beetroot and rose and also put that into a dessert. Now when you taste it, it tastes like exactly the way it should taste, and it tastes like completely, I suppose, normal, because you're going, but before you get to that point of saying, does beetroot work in a dessert? That's, I suppose, the point of experimentation. But when often people are kind of going, oh my God, beetroot and rose and sorrel, and then I must say, I think it's the most popular dessert in there, and people are always very much wowed by the kind of ingenuity of taking something and giving it a little twist, a little small twist, because it's not so much, some of the herbs like the sorrel or the chickweed are often used as garnishes. Yeah, and they'd be used, Enda would use them in very, very particular ways, like whether it's on top of the pork dish or on top of the lamb dish, like to try and create small little flavor pockets in your mouth when they all marry together. Like each of the dishes on the menu, for those who can't see it, is we don't put descriptions of how the food is cooked on the menu. So just for example, our pork neck dish at the moment is just it reads on the menu pork neck, onion, broccoli, rams and spinach. And what we wanted to do was to create a certain sense of theatricality that people wouldn't know how things were cooked. And the dish reads from the menu, it comes across in a very kind of primeval way. It's just onion. But how is that done? Now, Enda might often do the onions a few different ways on the one dish. Or even, for example, our most popular starter is our scallop dish with black pudding, cauliflower and pork belly. And they're all very items that in Irish cuisine at the moment would marry very, very well. I mean, we have a scallop and black pudding dish here. Scallops and black pudding are very, I mean, black pudding is I suppose, a fundamental element in Irish cuisine. But just for example, the cauliflower, they have, the cauliflower comes in a pureed form and also in a dehydrated form. So you have a nice crispy texture and you have a nice smooth texture. And then the black pudding comes in a pureed mousse form as well. So it's so we're changing people's expectations, because you always expect the black pudding to come in the rings and for it to be, have a certain density. So again, there are just a few of the items that, that we like to kind of play around with.
Well, now everything exploded. We could not even get into Anir when you won the Michelin star. Is this the only Michelin star in Western Ireland?
It is indeed, yeah.
What about the rest of Ireland? I guess Dublin has some.
Yeah, I think Dublin has four or five, and there's one just near Waterford as well.
So, but you said it really, your people just exploded in trying to get in at this point. And you won other awards too.
Yeah, we have. I mean, all of our, of the three restaurants we have won awards in, on various levels, but nothing like Anir receiving the Michelin star. And I suppose I can only characterize that as like a tsunami. Like, it was absolute. I mean, we didn't expect it. I mean, we were open a year and 2 months. I mean, we were definitely, and would be very much aware of that style of cuisine and what the Michelin want. And it would have been always there. We knew they were in. We knew the first time they were in, I met them after they'd eaten. They ate in Anir, they ate in Cava. I had a nice conversation with them. And then subsequently they were in a few times that we didn't know about, and I think the editor was in once, just, and pastry chef just recognized her because he had worked in London as well. And we thought, like, we really thought that if we got a Bib Gourmand, we thought that would be fantastic. And Enda had got a, Enda had a Bib Gourmand in the previous restaurant he worked in Sheridan's on the docks. And so we really thought, yeah, like that's, I thought, well, that's the level we're at. I mean, we knew the food we were producing was good. Was it good enough to be a Michelin star? Like, it's very hard. The criteria is very, it's very hard to pin down. So, I mean, when the news came through, and it came through in a very haphazard way because it had been leaked on the internet, and we had it and we didn't know we had it, and then it was up and then it was down, and then it wasn't until about 6 o'clock on that Thursday that we found out. And then everything kind of went crazy, you know. We went from a situation where we had a restaurant, a very forward-thinking restaurant in the west of Ireland that was struggling to win customers because the food was different. And we went from that position, and we're only open 5 days a week for 4 hours a night. And we went from doing maybe somewhere in between 5 and 25 people to being full every single night of the week. And I mean, we might do 40 or 45. And it created like a massive strain, not only on the chefs, on the front of house, on the administration level, because when you go from the phone ringing once or twice a day to the phone ringing for 8 hours solid, and maybe 50 or 60 emails coming in, and the people, I don't think the people know that it's only a 29-seater restaurant, and then you have customers getting frustrated because the phone's not being answered, because their emails aren't getting back to, and really, like, it's, I suppose, a small family restaurant that has, like, granted, has an amazing chef at its helm, but it's very hard, and the office is in the house, and you're like, we've got two kids, and you're in between trying to mind the kids and answer emails at the same time. And I suppose it's funny, because I presume the people ringing wouldn't think, oh my God, I'm going to get through to a central office or something, or I'm going to get through to the receptionist. I don't think we could afford a receptionist, as much as I'd love to have a receptionist. But I mean, it adds to the earthy character of the restaurant and its particularity in the west of Ireland. It's an amazing achievement, and I hope we can sustain it. Who's to know whether we'll keep it or we won't keep it? I mean, it's very hard to call Michelin or what they want and if they come back. And for me, the food is still of the same standard. The service is still of the same standard. So I don't see why we wouldn't. But I mean, now it's like when you get something you've always wanted or you've dreamt of getting it, then the minute you get it, your biggest fear is losing it.
We haven't talked yet about, now, I mean, that's only been open like a year and a half. What about this gastropub? How long has that been open, called Eat?
We opened Eat last October, And again, I mean, maybe we just love doing things in a haphazard fashion in the west of Ireland. The owner of the pub used to eat in Cava and in Ayr. And he had an empty kitchen up there because his tenant had left. And he wanted to do something new and interesting in food. So he was in here telling me he had an empty kitchen. And then I started thinking, oh, God, what if we could do something with the sense of produce that we have in and near, but put it through the filter of a gastropub? And I suppose that's what connects the three restaurants that we kind of branded as Eat Galway, to try and see, well, what's the best food we can get in Galway and its surrounding environment, and how do we put that through various different filters so people enjoy it? So you mentioned earlier on that all our meat and our fish, our fresh meat and our fresh fish, and a lot of our vegetables in Cava are Irish. They all go through a kind of, I'd say, a Spanish lens. And the same way in Eat, it's a gastropub, so we have like nice hearty ribeye steaks and venison and, say, pheasant at the moment because it's game, lovely mushrooms, all from this area. But they're all through a slightly different lens because it's a gastropub. And, of course, we don't have the same labour intensiveness on the food as we do in Ayr. In Ayr, we've got three or four chefs working solely, create a menu for 4 hours for that evening. In Eat, we have a gastropub that opens at 12 and it's open for 10 hours a day. So you've got to, I suppose, you work with the model that you have, and also with the people that are in the locality. And I think what's most interesting is that whether the food is high or low, or, I mean, I think people need to see, I mean, where is the food coming from first, and then look at, say, the style of it. Because for me, you can produce burger or a fish and chips or a tortilla or something like the scallops in an ear. I mean, they all can be amazing at their own level. And I think that's what people forget. People forget that, oh, a burger's just a burger. But, like, I mean, you can produce a Michelin star burger, and there are places, gastropubs in England that have done that. And I think we need to understand that in the west of Ireland, that we have to look at our primary source of our ingredients and then think about what sort of style are we going to put on them.
Well, if people aren't interested in coming to the west of Ireland after hearing this discussion with you, I'd be really amazed.
So thank you so much for joining us today, JP. Please give our regards to DeGreen, who I talked to a couple of days ago as we were making arrangements at the last minute to come here. I'm so glad that we did. It's been a most interesting adventure, and we thank you for sharing your views on things with us today. And we'll be back with more of the story of dining in Galway right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, and this is wow time. We almost missed this place. Good grief, I'm glad that we did not, because it was really a scene. The G Hotel, designed by hat maker extraordinaire
Philip Tracy.
But you can't really call him a milliner or a hat maker. I mean, he's a designer, big-time designer, with a lot of style. He, of course, designs all the hats that are jaw-dropping that you see at all the royal events and all the other events in England. But anyhow, I don't remember how much we talked about with the publicity director about the actual decor, but...
Quite a lot.
Okay, because it was knock your socks off, as I said.
Yeah, it's a little bit like Alexander McQueen meets... somebody else. Really, really, absolutely.
Oh, it's a must-see.
Most startling piece of design. Excellent service, too.
Yeah, the service is really cool.
We only had a brief acquaintance with the cuisine at lunchtime, but it was really excellent. And the chef, Pauline, seems like a real go-getter. So it's a place you should include in your trip to Galway. Of that, there's no doubt. So here's the G Hotel. And the biggest element of surprise about it, I forgot to mention it, I think, in the interview, but the hotel's in a shopping center, and the outside of the hotel looks like it's part of the shopping center. It doesn't prepare you for what's inside. So here's Sinead and Pauline.
Sinead.
Sinead. to talk about
Sinead or Sinead?
To talk about staying and dining at the G Hotel in Galway.
We are happily, in fact, I must say delightfully, at the G Hotel in Galway, and it is stunning. It is so beyond anything I even imagined, although I've heard wonderful things about it. We're going to be talking, first of all, to Sinead Cassidy, who is the marketing sales director.
Sales and PR manager.
PR manager. And then we're going to be talking to the executive chef, Pauline Riley. You must be delighted working in a place like this.
It is. It's a splendid place to come into on a wet day or on a sunny day. I think the interiors are just so stunning. Just to give you a bit of background about the G Hotel, we opened our doors in November 2005, so we're now 7 years old. The design director was the world-renowned milliner, Philip Tracy, who would be very famous for designing beautiful pieces of millinery for the Queen, for Spice Girls, for many, for the likes of Sarah Jessica Parker and Sex and the City, so a lot of well-known celebrities. So he was the design director of the property, and his influence is seen everywhere from the moment to step into the door, to the lounges, to the restaurant, to the bathrooms, to everything all around the hotel.
So he is a hometown boy.
He is. He's just from out the road to Haskra in Galway. So his whole influence of the G Hotel was to bring Galway to the hotel, the influence of the ocean. So if you look at throughout the hotel, there would be coral shells.
Oh, is that why the corals? Here?
Yeah, so there's a lot of coral mirrors or shell imagery in the fabrics that we use in our chairs, in the bedrooms, in all over the hotel.
Well, the colors are just totally striking. Tell us about that.
Okay, the idea behind the colors in the hotel, a little bit about it would be that the owner, Mr. Jerry Barrett, and the design director, Philip Tracy, wanted to make it very much like a movie set. So when you walk into the hotel, your initial impact is the concierge desk and reception, which has the contrast of the dark black and the white. So there's a big massive white shell, that's the concierge desk. Then a fabulous fuchsia pink carpet brings you through the three lounges, which are like movie sets. So the first lounge is the Grand Salon, which has a centerpiece, would be a massive, very, it has a real wow factor, the lighting, which has just under 300 light bulbs. And that's the Grand Salon, which is beige in colour and has two very beautiful fireplaces. Then the next feature room is the striking pink ladies' lounge, which also then runs into the gentlemen's lounge, which is your rich navies and purples, and it's all about the heavy velvet fabric. That then runs into the cocktail lounge and in then to the Pièce de Résistance, the restaurant, which is now headed by Pauline Riley, our new head chef.
It's called Gigi's, and restaurant that's where Gigi's. We are now.
Yeah.
How many rooms in this hotel?
Okay, in the G Hotel, first of all, to let you know, it's Galway's only 5-star hotel. There's 101 bedrooms.
Okay. I wanted to say, you have won so many awards.
We have,
could you
thank
run
God.
Us through just this last week and last month?
Recently, we won the prestigious award, which was the AA 5-star award, which is the Automobile Association. And it was huge for us here in the west of Ireland. It was the only hotel in the last 2 years to be awarded a 5-star grading. So it was made huge national coverage in the papers and radio and TV. And that was a big deal for us. The last hotel to get that was 2 years ago, and that was the Ritz-Carlton in Wicklow. And then the restaurant here also won two rosettes for its food. So the hotel would have won loads of awards since it opened. And again, the food is synonymous for the quality of food and the service here.
I love these plexiglass counters and tables filled with Swarovski crystals.
That's the great thing. At reception and the various bars and upstairs when you go to the first and second floor, all our countertops have multicolored Swarovski crystals. So when the light shines on them, it has a dancing effect. Yeah, it's quite striking.
It's in fact, I think that the people who come here are influenced by the stylish surroundings because they're probably the most stylishly dressed people I've seen in Ireland.
Yeah. And the wonderful thing about the G, and I think why many people also come here, is that you never know who you're going to bump into. We recently had Mumford & Sons. They're a huge band. One of the lead singers had his girlfriend, or actually his wife with him, Kerry Mulligan. She's a well-known actress who's making global fame. So she was here. Another day you might walk in and meet recently we had the management of U2. So you never know in the G who you're going to rub shoulders with. Philip Tracy himself, you never know. Be sure to have your hat on.
You always have your hat on. Well, actually we did go to his shop and I tried on some hats, but that really...
The reason you didn't do so well is you didn't have a chauffeured Rolls Royce waiting for you at the curb outside. This owner must be a very bold person.
Well, you know what? He's great imagination. And I think in the hotel industry, in Ireland and worldwide, there's so much of the mass-produced hotels with the same old boring flair, the same old boring interiors. So the owner here, Gerry Barrett, wanted to create something bold, something different, and something that has never seen before in the west of Ireland. And the G Hotel has that stamp. People travel here from all over Ireland, Europe, and worldwide just to see the design, the interiors, and the inspiration behind Philip Tracy's only, the only property he's ever put a stamp to.
I haven't seen a hotel like this anywhere in the world.
No, it is very cool.
We've stayed in lots of them.
Good.
So it's truly remarkable.
Good.
The more remarkable thing is that we actually weren't going to come here until 24 hours ago.
And I know.
And I'm already so glad that we did.
Good.
Because it's such a remarkable statement. Now, does the owner own other hotels?
He does indeed. We're owned by a group called Edward Hotels, and okay. They would also own the Merrick Hotel, which is a 4-star in the heart of Galway City. It's a very historical hotel. It's a beautiful, she's like a big old grand hotel. She's beautiful. It's now called the Merrick, which is the original name of the hotel. The owner would also own a star hotel along the east coast of Ireland. Well, not the east coast. It's in Drogheda. It's called the D, which is a beautiful property as well.
He likes these letters.
Yeah, it's very cool. And then we also manage a beautiful property in Cong on the grounds of Ashford Castle, Cullis Lockery. And that's a beautiful, beautiful property. If you're thinking of renewing those vows, it's a great place for a wedding. It's really stunning.
About wedding, you are building an addition onto this property.
Yes, we are. It was because we were refusing so much business. Our current banqueting suite, which we call the event suite, catered for up to 90 people. And we found that people, I guess, in looking for a wedding want something a little bit different and glamorous, which we can offer them here. So because we were turning away so many weddings because we simply couldn't take the numbers, the general manager here, Trina Gannon, looked at all that and said, right, we need to expand due to demand. So that's what we did. About 6 weeks ago, construction started, and thankfully Philip Tracy is putting his design stamp on that too. So we're due to launch our new wedding suite on Valentine's weekend next year.
Nice.
Yeah, and which we can take 180, 190 people. So we're doubling our current capacity for weddings.
And of course, I mean, you could have great decor and great ambience, but people, I think, inevitably question, what is the food like? And so we're going to be talking to the chef here. And yes, we sampled lunchtime here, and it was indeed yum yum, Pauline.
Good, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, you have an interesting background. You started out as a young woman, worked your way up in the kitchen, right?
Worked my way up. Well, I originally started, like a lot of chefs, washing pots and pans, and progressed from there to sandwiches and salads, as you do.
But why did you want to do food?
I just always had a passion for it when I was growing up. To get your foot in the door somewhere is often where you started, on the pots and pans. But I just really enjoy working with food, enjoying the different tastes, just experiencing something different every time. But I didn't realise I was going to be a chef at the time. I would have been very science orientated. So I went off and I did a degree in science,
really?
First off, yeah. Here in Galway, actually, it's nice to be back in Galway again now, because I was gone there for a wee while. But yeah, I was kind of always pushed towards science. But then many people would have said in the past that cooking is a science anyway, so
it
you can
is,
kind
yes.
of go in that too. So I was actually down in Galway looking for somewhere to live for my fourth year in college, and I was going past the Merrick, which is the sister hotel for here, and outside was a sign saying interviews for professional cookery in the GMIT. So it was like a sign. So I went home that day with nowhere to live, but I had a new career for my dad. So
you worked your way up to sous chef.
I worked my way up. I actually have been based in Galway for quite a long time. I actually worked in Liss Lockery before Mr. Barrett took it over, and I worked my way up to sous chef there. And I left there and I came to work here at the G as the sous chef. So I worked here for about 12 months, but I'd be kind of an ambitious person, so I wanted to be a head chef. So I took a position in Donegal as the head chef in a beautiful property as well called Harvey's Point. So I was only there for about one season really, but this position came available, so it was like coming home again, coming back to the G.
Yes,
so I'm back here again.
Chef.
Yeah,
it's interesting because, well, we had lunch and we had two dishes that I would not associate at all with traditional Irish food.
No, I suppose what you had was the pulled pork sandwich, which is, I suppose, it's synonymous with America really, but
yeah.
Pork, I feel, is very underrated over here in Ireland. We don't use
really?
It enough. Yeah, I really feel we don't use it enough. And what we use in the pulled pork sandwich is the shoulder pork, which is a cheaper cut but cooked for a long time, and given a bit of love and it tastes fantastic. Like, so I'd be big into cooking, say, the cheaper cuts of meat or the underexploited cuts of meat for a long time. I like my braising and my confit and that sort of cooking. I'm big into that.
Now, the fries that came with it were, first of all, gigantic.
Yes, chunky.
And they were also delicious.
Good, glad to hear it.
I mean, did you do something special to them? Did you cook them like three times or
something
like that?
They're twice cooked, our chips here, so they're just... The new thing now is twice cooked or triple cooked and in duck fat and all the rest. We just do it in our own local oil.
In duck fat?
No, they were just in our own local oil from a local company, but just twice cooked. Yeah, they're nice. It's the potato you use on the chips, so we're using Roosters at the moment, so that makes all the difference.
Well, now you seem to have, of course, I had the duck and noodle salad, which was decidedly Asian inspired, and I see other Asian influences, particularly on the dinner menu. I'm now looking hungrily at the dinner
good,
menu.
Good, I'm glad to hear it.
You're Asian inspired as well, or you draw from all kinds of places?
I kind of draw from all kinds of places. I would say
chorizo oil.
Yeah.
Well, ratatouille, I mean, lots of panna cotta, lots of influences.
Lots of differences, but that's just, I suppose, a reflection on me and where I've been and, you know, a place that I've visited, and I like to take things back to the hotel. And then the guys in the kitchen, we're a great team, so my team are here for a reason because they have such experience, and I want to draw on that experience. And so it's nice for everyone to get a chance to put a little bit of them on a menu as well. I mean, they have the experience, so I might as well help them along in their career path as well by helping them put a stamp on the menu as well. It's now nice, like it's a motivating thing.
That's great. And now is it difficult for a woman chef in Ireland in top-rate kitchens?
I've been asked that before, but as far as I'm concerned, it's my job and it's just my job. Do you know what I mean?
You seem very straight about it, yeah.
Yeah, people get a surprise when they see it's a woman chef. It's just kind of not the done thing at the moment, but I'm comfortable at what I'm at. I'm comfortable in my role, so I don't know anything different. You know, I've always been ambitious and a striver and a go-getter sort of person, and if you're that sort of person, you're going to get what you want, which is your head chef position, if that's the career path you're in. If I was in another career, I could be something top somewhere else today, but I'm in the kitchen. I'm in the kitchen, so.
Now, this menu, besides, you are ingredient-driven, as you said, and you love the local products and use that and so forth. Aside from all that, which is certainly important, but what else? And you draw on these foreign influences, that sort of distinguishes your kind of cuisine too, right?
A little bit it would do, but just, I suppose, on places that I've been and visited. I haven't really worked abroad, but on places that I've been, I've traveled a lot around Europe.
A lot.
So just to bring it back, and something as well, when I see something new, it's nice to bring it back to the team and go, have you seen this before? And it's a learning curve for them too, as well as a learning curve for myself, but it's always nice to do that, I find.
Well, you were very quick to say what we should eat for lunch. So on your dinner menu, tell us what you're really crazy about.
On the dinner menu, I suppose I'm crazy about the beef anyway, the fillet steak and the ribeye steak. You can't go wrong with a good steak, but I love my seafood. I love the turbot with the tagliatelle.
Yes.
Beetroot tagliatelle, which is indeed homemade. We make our own beetroot juice and progress from there. And then clams and mussels. I mean, all you have to do is look out the window and you see the shore there. The clams and mussels.
We can hardly get abalone in the States anymore.
We could nearly go out and pick them, but yeah, the seafood and the beef in Ireland now is famous worldwide, so I'd always go for beef and the turbot, the seafood. I mean, look out the
wonderful
window.
And this pan-seared halibut has smoked haddock and paprika couscous with salsify, which is one of my most favorites. I've never had salsify tempura.
Salsify is also known as the oyster of the land. It's supposed to have taste flavor synonymous with oysters, so it's just nice to put it in as a fish element to the dish, like kind of rounds it off. Like it's something different too, like when you say you haven't had it before. I mean, nice crunchy texture on the outside. You can't beat it.
And do you have a separate pastry chef, or do you do pastry?
I've actually quite a bit of pastry experience myself. I have an excellent chef, Michelle Valentine. She's from County Meath. So we actually work very well together because she likes to bounce ideas off myself and I like to bounce ideas off her. She's excellent. She's very quirky, which fits in with the design and the decor of the hotel. Like, she likes to do her own little twist on various things. And she's, the moment she has a chocolate fondant with truffled honeyed popcorn on it, which sounds very strange, but works really, really good. And we were just one of our suppliers there during the week, just visiting them on a call. And one of their new products is Truffled Honey. We were kind of going, oh, we've been there, we've done that. Like, so she's very good, very an excellent taste palate.
Now, I see his Erasmopolitan cocktail. So you have a cocktail program as well?
Yeah, we do indeed. So Erasmopolitan is kind of a signature cocktail to the hotel, really. It's a Cosmo done with a raspberry twist, needless to say, but it's very good. I sampled it myself. It's a it's a nice experience.
And your wine list is, I thought, first of all, it was very accessible. Was, I mean, you have a couple of pricey things on, but I mean, basically, I think it's very good value in these wines. Who does the wine program?
The wine program is done with Mr. Barrett. Actually, he's great involvement with it, and Trina Gannon, and our operations manager Renee Hendricks is going to be having great involvement in that now. He's just joined us now in the last 6 weeks, so his big passion is wines and tea. So it's something he's really looking into now. It's very exciting. I mean, I love to see the changes as well, and I love to see something new being brought in. And Renee has a great worldwide experience with wines and everything, so it's always nice to see someone else's thoughts and quirks on the wine list. So I'm excited for that to get looked at and adjusted as well, in line with our menus as well. Like, so it'll be, it's a very exciting time for us at the moment.
Well, do you have any immediate goals or long-term goals for different things?
Oh, jeez, that was a curveball. I think you just threw me. I wasn't expecting it. But I suppose we are 2A rosette standard at the moment, and I'd really just like to keep the 2A rosettes and hopefully strive toward the 3A rosette one day. Maybe not the next 12 months, but down the line, it'd be somewhere we'd really like to get to.
Well, I certainly wish you all the luck. And I said to Peter, actually, right after we met you, I think that you've got what it takes, and I think that the place is a very good place to take a leap and spring from.
Well, thank you very much. It's lovely to hear.
Well, thank you.
And don't go away, because we'll be back with the final segment also in Galway.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
And here we are again. Rabbit, when you said we were going next to the 12, I'm thinking the 12 what? Apostles? Days of Christmas? It turns out to be pins or pens, which is mountains or peaks.
Yeah, they started out as bends, the 12 bends. And we were actually in the area of the 12 bends. More of that in a later program. It turns out somewhere along the line the word got corrupted and became pins instead. So whether it's 12 bends or 12 pins, the 12 Hotel, a remarkably modern-looking establishment,
yes,
that's pretending to be look old on the outside, but has neon lights to prove that they really are with it, which they certainly are.
They sure are.
And they have a complex of restaurants. We only sample one of them, but we got to talk about all of them with Fergus and Campbell.
What an interesting experience we've had coming from all of these little estates in the country to hit on a place called the 12, which we'll explain in a minute, which has so much urban energy. And we're going to talk a little bit about the place with its general manager, Fergus O'Halloran, and then we're going to be talking also to their fine dining restaurant, West Chef de Cuisine, Campbell White. Let's start with you, Fergus, because you can give us sort of the overall picture. Where are we, and what is the story behind the 12?
Thank you, Ellen. Hello to your audience. The 12 is, I guess it's a venue for fine dining, great food experiences. We've got four different outlets as such, and we're very passionate about the local produce that we have in the area, as well as our suppliers, producers. In that essence as well, there's 48 boutique bedrooms, of which half of them are suites. Really thrive on...
We have a bar in our room. Is that typical?
Well, you're in Ireland, Anne, so you need to have a bar in your bedroom. There's 12 rooms with bars. There's another 12 rooms where the bar is somewhat designed a little different because they're more family-friendly. The hotel itself, it's a boutique designer-led hotel. Very eclectic. We thrive on culture, art, and creating experiences for our guests here.
It's modern. It's modern,
but we're, I guess you could say, in an urban ruralness, because we're in Barna, which is the gateway to world-famous Connemara. So we're just literally 10 minutes outside of Galway City, which in essence is the cultural hotspot in Ireland. Every week of the year there's some sort of festival going on, be it the Arts Festival, a comedy festival, the world famous Oyster Festival.
Now, listeners, this is not the easiest place in the world to find. Have faith, keep on driving west, keeping the sea on your left.
Correct, yes.
And as you get into the village of Barna, B-A-R-N-A, you'll be amazed, because at a stoplight on the far right-hand corner is a neon sign that says the 12. And the building appears to be an old building.
Correct.
But very modern inside.
Yes. The building actually is literally, it's only 5 years old, but we built the exterior to really reflect the environment we're in.
It's not old. You built it to look old.
It's built in 2007 is when we opened. It was a greenfield site. It was built on the site of a very old hotel and bar that actually dates back to the 1800s. And that was called the 12 Pins, hence the name now, the 12.
Well, I read about that. I just had it confused.
Yeah. And the 12 Pins is named after the mountain range, which is in Connemara, the 12 Bend. Yeah, as you're approaching Barna, you'll notice that the language is, it's not only hard to get to, I guess, but the signs actually change language as well, because they become Irish. Because you're in the Irish-speaking region of Ireland now, called the Gaeltacht.
Everyone speaks Gaelic here?
Everybody would like to think they do, but not everybody does, no. But the majority of people that, I guess, are indigenous to the area do actually speak Irish, yes.
Now, there are different elements to the... Could you describe the property, how they're... You have the pizzeria, you have
As I say, we've got 48 rooms, some beautiful suites. One of the suites is called Suite X11. It's, let's say, our penthouse suite, and that's been described as the sexiest suite in Ireland. I can show you that later, but it's basically, you can't have any inhibitions in there. It's all glass.
Oh, really? All mirrors.
Some mirrors, yes. I guess when we opened the bar on the ground floor, was designed really as a locals bar. So as a guest staying in the hotel, you have the opportunity of going down, mixing with the locals. So it's different from any normal hotel bar. There's always a great buzz in there. You know, we do live traditional music on Fridays and that mix of different styles of music on Saturdays.
I noticed a lot of pregnant women. How that fits into the conversation, yeah. But I did notice it.
We have every mix. The pregnant ladies, the baby club ladies generally arrive on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday morning after breakfast and stay for about 2 hours drinking cappuccinos and lattes. And then our lunch business comes in from noon up until 3 o'clock, and it's always very, very hectic in there. And then in the evening in the bar, the whole neighborhood comes out to eat, and it's very much a destination place. I mean, from all over Galway, families, business people, every mix of person is coming to dine as such in the bar because of that atmosphere and people watching quality that it has. On the first floor, then, we have West, which is our showcase restaurant. That's where we really get creative with our cuisine. And in there, Campbell White is the chef de cuisine. West has been nominated and received every industry accolade, really, in terms of its offering, in terms of food and wine. Our wine program is very, very strong. There we've won the Wine Spectator Award for the last 5 years in a row, and the only restaurant in Ireland to do so. We've won every other industry award there is in Ireland for our wine offering. It's not really the depth of the cellar. We have some lovely blue chip wines, but it's really the quality of the offering and the work that goes into it.
Here's an idea of range, and then I'll ask you to speak even a little bit more about the reason some of these are there, because there are two bottles on display on the way in, which I'm sure you emptied, because they're Grange Hermitage from South Australia, a wine for which we have great respect, and for which the United States as a whole has great respect. But you have a Grange vintage on the menu for me would be a very modest price of, is it $290?
Yeah. Yep.
$290 for Grange is almost the wholesale price.
Yeah.
And then at the other end of the scale, we had a very interesting wine. It was very puzzling, called the Big Top, mm-hmm. which is a California Zinfandel. But the label won't tell you where the grapes are grown.
Oh, yeah.
At least as I read it, unless the fine print was even smaller, it would appear that there's a Frenchman who's operating as a négociant, buying wines in California and selling them in Europe.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can shed any further light on that.
Well, going back to the Grange, I have to say, yes, Peter, you got great taste. When we purchased that wine, purchased, I'd say, a case of it in 2007. Now, since then, the price has gone up. But in terms of our wine selection, we put a very small markup on our wines. That's always been our policy, and I think that's why we've been recognized within the industry, the accolades that the wines have received.
This is a fascinating, eclectic wine list.
Yeah.
We enjoyed a venison dish last night, which we're going to have Campbell talk to us about in just a moment. The range of choices available for a big red wine to go with venison were so many I couldn't distill. In fact, we had a taste-off before we chose the one that we did.
Why didn't you choose the Grange?
We didn't want to trespass too much on your hospitality. And I'm not sure it would have gone with venison all that well.
Yeah,
it might have been just too big.
You're right.
And too overpowering a sensation. But if we come back the next time when you invite us to, then we'll find out what vintage you have
next. We'll pop that Grange.
Now, this is a good segue, I guess, to go into Campbell's part of the operation. But before passing by, we should say that West was closed last evening because it only opens from Wednesday until Saturday. And a young man called Sean, who it turns out was born in the good old US of A, was cooking in the Pins. And he cooked some extremely excellent sort of local variety bistro type dishes for us. But he also took on the task of preparing a dish that's one of the signatures on your menu, Campbell. Use that as a starting point to talk about what you're trying to do.
In the West kitchen.
Yeah, thank you there. Well, we just have the philosophy of trying to use ingredients that are basically in season as much as we possibly can, of course.
Has anybody noticed, by the way, your accent is from New Zealand? You're not the Irish.
No, I'm not. I am from New Zealand, and I have been traveling around the world probably since I was 20, so for the last 12 years. So I visited and worked in a lot of different places around the world. So it helped me as a chef as well, because you can use different flavors and stuff like that from different countries and different elements and stuff like that. So I think it actually helps chefs to travel.
Makes all the difference.
It does indeed, yeah, doing different cuisines and stuff like that. But try to use as many locally sourced products as we possibly can. It's getting into that stage now that we are getting more and more local suppliers turning up, which is great. You know, you probably have it a lot in the USA. You got them all over this up, but it's just recently come into Ireland and it's really taking off. People are really starting to enjoy their food, and I try to use as many different products as you would possibly, and turn them into something new and modern. As you would have seen on the venison dish that you had last night, I had a dumpling. Turnip, and I had chicory, which a lot of people would shy away from. But if you have the balances of all the flavors right, then it works, yeah? And you just got to really try hard to come up with menus that are a little bit different, so it keeps people interested, different methods, and keep them interested that way.
How about another dish that you could discuss?
Oh, I could discuss a lot of them. I've actually put a lot of work this year into my cheaper dishes. Like at the moment, I've got a chicken on. And a lot of people, they go out and they want chicken, but you can also find that chicken is quite boring. So
roast chicken is so hot in the United States right now.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just recently we did chicken snack box, which is a take on what you would get from the local chippy, which is chicken and chips. But instead we brined the chicken and confit it and then put it into a nice spiced crust and deep fried it and served with a tree of sauces, coleslaw, and in a potato box. So it was really sort of playing on the food and getting a little bit creative that way. And now for my latest one, I've really gone to town on it, confing the chicken and stuff like that, making, mushroom cantaloni by hand and everything like that, getting really good products, and it really looks fabulous on the plate. So get a lot more satisfaction of using the cheaper ingredients and trying to bring the cheaper ingredients back, the things that people aren't eating. There's no reason that you shouldn't go out and have a nice chicken dish if it's done right. I try to use a lot of the cheaper cuts as well as the more expensive cuts, because at the same time, if I do that, you get more on the plate and it's not as expensive as
you could be stung in other places.
Now, this is a seafood heaven, too, off the coast of Galway. So you're getting scallops from Connemara, I think?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, we've got a guy up there who gets them for us.
One of the things that we enjoyed absolutely the most last evening in the pins was a dried lamb.
Oh, yeah, that's from
the local supplier.
Yeah, McGill's Butcher. They're in Otterard, if I pronounce that correctly. I'm getting a bit better on my Irish pronunciation. Now, he supplies us with a lot of meat. He's a local butcher. He supplies us with a lot of our smoked sausages that you see on the pizzas in the pizzeria. I also use them. We also use them for pastas and stuff like that all through the restaurant. Air-dried lamb you have downstairs. I have it upstairs as well using it. And he's just great. He's an artisan butcher. He's really gone back to doing these products and doing them right. And, you know, it's great to have him just up the road. He's not too far away. He's only 30 minutes. He comes into us, brings us what we want. We ring him. He cuts us the stuff that we want, how we want it. And it's great. And it sort of takes away from the bigger places that you don't get the quality. You get the, you know, mass-produced stuff where this is smaller and it's, you know, looked after and cared after, and you can see it in the end product that somebody has spent their time looking after that, either the animal or doing it by breaking the carcasses down by hand and hanging it all properly and everything. The quality of the meat and everything is superb.
Now you have an ambition.
I do indeed.
Your future. Go ahead.
We do. Well, after the last 2 years, we've been doing quite well. A rosette every year. So we got one the first year I was here, a second one the last year. There's been a lot more interested from the Michelin Guide this lately in Ireland and also in Galway, with one of our main competitors getting one this year. And we were just thinking, well, we should just go for it, see what happens. So this year, the main ambition is to try and get the Michelin star and see how we go with that.
Now, this year being 2013.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Because the 2013 guide, I guess, was just announced.
Yeah.
But you have some coverage in the Red Guide already, I think. Am I correct?
We have a Bib Gamond.
Oh, sick. It's one of those funny little representations that looks a little bit like the Michelin Man, but which is a recommended place to stay. That's interesting but economical.
Correct.
And it's certainly the kind of place that we look for sometimes when we're reading the guide and we're in a place we don't know. It's certainly a very good thing to have, and I'm sure you are thrilled about that.
Oh, well, we are. Yeah, it's worth the detour. If you can find us. But it's easy to find us, really.
Now, you mentioned a second ago a competitor that just got a star.
Yeah, that is Anya Restaurant in town there.
Oh, okay. I think I just read an article by the chef there who was writing about some dishes.
JP.
In one of the Irish travel magazines that I was leafing through while I was here.
Mm.
So based on our experience, I think your chances are very good. Don't you think so, sweetheart? And we want to close with something that's even more interesting beyond the 12 itself, which is a new food and wine initiative, shall we describe it as, Fergus?
Correct, yeah. It's, food tourism. Ireland, you know, has wonderful, wonderful producers, wonderful restaurants. And Galway itself as well now with JP's Anir receiving a Michelin star shows that, you know, we have wonderful dining experiences here. What we really need to do is put that on the map so that people come to Ireland to experience food. And this initiative has just been set up where 12 of us were nominated as, let's say, food heroes or food champions to go out and put this program into place. In Galway, myself and JP, actually, are representing the west of Ireland. And there's people from all over the country, be it not just restaurateurs, but also food producers. So, and people who have organized food festivals. So each of us will go back to our area and try to join, I guess, all the dots in the equation, get the producers really working with the restaurants. And, you know, I'd really love to take it even into the schools and start teaching right at an early age the respect that people need to have for food. Even in the kitchens, produce shows up at the back door. I think what we need to be doing with our chef de parties is actually taking them out to the farms so that they get a better understanding of how the veg is growing. If we can inculcate a great philosophy and respect for food within Ireland, I think the rest will come. So we have a starting point.
Now, if you mentioned earlier on, you're not active enough yet to have a website, but there is a website that people are going to be able to go to track this as you develop more and more of your program.
Yes, well, it's led by Falch Ireland, which is a tourism organization
for
Ireland. Ireland.
Can you spell that out?
Foilte is welcome in Irish, which is F-A-I-L-T-E.
Okay.
Ireland. The website is actually discoverireland.ie.
Okay.
So discoverireland.ie. And we'd hope to have information up there very soon.
And the website for 12 is?
And it's the12hotel.ie.
Great.
Well, you can follow us on Twitter. We're quite active there. We love talking about what we're doing in terms of food, and it's the 12.
Great. And we can't close without telling you on the air that we had the most marvelous service last evening. A young man called Connor took it as his personal mission to make sure that we had a wonderful time, which we did. So, Connor, we thank you, and we compliment you to your boss and
thank
your colleagues.
Thank you, Peter.
It's been our pleasure to be here. Sadly, we must be on the road to another delightful destination, but we certainly will treasure the time we spend here at the 12. So thank you so much to both of you, and to Sean, the chef downstairs, and to Connor. And we'll be back with more reports from the beautiful southwest of Ireland rather than the west of Ireland in next week's program. So please join us then. And in the meantime,
bye-bye.